Hello
Hello
there.
Welcome back to Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Jacob.
And I'm Eli.
We're coming at you with episode number 102. Wow, that is a big number to say. 102 of In a Galaxy, of our chronological rewatch, all of Star Wars. Today, we are looking at three episodes of the new or new-ish animated short series, Tales of the Jedi. We're looking at the Count Dooku episodes. So these are Justice, Choices, and the Sith Lord, taking place between, 62 BBY all the way up to right about the Phantom Menace.
32, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, 32. So yeah, very, very interesting episodes we have here today. Anything else to say, Eli, before we jump into it?
No, I'm excited to do this, and I'll just say this. Because season 12 and a half of In a Galaxy is a half season, as we're calling it, we are not going to be doing a special episode after the conclusion of the season. So next episode, as we'll talk about at the end of this episode, we're jumping right into the Bad Batch. So fine. So this is, and you can quote me on this because I know we've been promising we're going to do this for months. And now we're actually doing it. This is the final In a Galaxy episode before we finally get into the Bad Batch Season 2. Next episode will be about the Bad Batch Season 2. I promise.
It's been
a
while.
We're actually doing it this time.
For real this time.
For real this time. We are doing Bad Batch Season 2. And that's pretty much this entire summer is going to be us doing Bad Batch Season 2. We want to give it a little space. Usually I the time... For In a Galaxy, to give it enough time to sit with it, I like to say 6 months. It's gonna have been about 5 months since Bad Batch started releasing, so a bit less than we'd like, but you know what, that's fine. You know, it's not like an entire live action TV show and a video game have come out since then, except for they have, and we won't be covering. We won't be covering the video game for at least around a year, and we won't be covering that season of that television show probably until the next decade. So I think we'll be fine. I'm joking, but like, how much am I?
Not much. I mean, they keep coming out with new stuff, you know.
The amount of stuff that we have to get to before we get to Mando season 3, is incredibly high. It's very high. But anyway, we're not talking about the Mandalorian season 3. We're talking about Tales of the Jedi. We're talking about Justice, Choices, and the Sith Lord.
In Justice, Qui-Gon Jinn and Jedi Master Dooku travel to a planet. It is an unnamed planet, I believe. And they land at this very, very desolate village with lots of burned trees, and the people there are not too happy. And they go into the local bar, and, you know, Dooku immediately starts throwing his weight around, exercising his authority as a Jedi, because they are on a mission to recover the kidnapped son of the senator for this planet. And it quickly becomes apparent, or Dooku finds out, that pretty much all of the patrons of this pub are in on the plot to kidnap the senator's son. So they're the kidnappers take the two Jedi there, and they kind of explain along the way that they're kidnapping the son because the senator has created such living conditions on the planet that it is impossible for them to farm. It is impossible for them to make a living. Pretty much unlivable, intolerable conditions. And they did it because that they feel that is the only way. That is the only way for them to fight back and make their voices heard. They cannot get anyone else elected, and it is the only thing they can do.
Qui-Gon
and Dooku. Wow, sorry. A little rusty today. Qui-Gon and Dooku actually they meet the son, who is not nearly as pissed off about having been kidnapped as you would imagine someone to be. In fact, he is very sympathetic to the cause of the villagers. He says he had no idea that his father had created such conditions on his own planet, and he is horrified, and he is on the side of the villagers. Then the senator shows up with his soldiers, and there is a standoff, but Dooku sides with the villagers, saying that the senator has abandoned his duty and has failed his people as a leader, as a senator, as a representative. So a firefight ensues, goes on for a while, and Dooku ends up force chokes the senator almost to death in order to stop the fight. However, Qui-Gon and the son manage to stop him from killing the senator. And as they prepare to leave the planet, the son promises to prevent something like this from ever happening to the villagers again. And Dooku hopes that substantive change will happen because of his actions. So I think it was a pretty interesting episode. I don't know, Eli, where do you wanna start with this?
I'd like you to start by summarizing choices.
Oh, sorry, you're right. My bad. You got that out. I forgot. Sorry, I defaulted.
Yeah, so no, sorry. Don't worry. Yeah. Keep going.
I defaulted to the old way that we do it. So fast forward a bit to choices. It's unknown. This one is the most ambiguous as to when it takes place in the timeline. But we fast forward and we see Dooku with pre-Jedi Council Mace Windu. And they are together on they're landing on the planet of Raxus Secundus to investigate the death of one Jedi Master Catri. So they go around, they do their Jedi, they kind of do this whole Jedi detective shtick, because the claim is that she was protecting a senator. There's the senator of Raxus Secundus. Yeah, what's the senator's name? Help me out here, I forgot.
Larrick.
So Senator Larrick, they're asking Senator Larrick some questions. Senator Larrick's story is that he was going back. There were rebels on Raxus Secundus who were threatening war. So he returned to the planet with no security force, only with Master Catri in order to try and negotiate with the rebels. However, they were ambushed and Master Catri was killed. However, Mace and Dooku both agree that Larrick is obviously hiding something. So they go to the site of the supposed ambush, and using their Jedi detective skills, they realize that all the blast marks, all the carbon scoring, all the laser craters and gouging that have been left from this supposed huge fight all came from the direction of where Larrick's ship would have been landed. Just then, when they tell this to Larrick and his security team, Larrick kind of cracks and he runs yelling out that the security did it. He is shot by his own security force. The head security guard shoots Larrick, and the security guards reveal that they all along actually were the rebels. And there's a firefight. You know, the two Jedi make quick work of the security guards, and they take the head security guard prisoner. The head security guard is basically then says that the Jedi are the Republic's lapdogs, and that they don't care about the galaxy, and that the Republic and the Senate have become corrupted, and you know, they were rebelling because they don't like the Senate, they don't like the Republic, corruption, yada yada yada, all that good stuff. And it ends with Dooku. Dooku actually talks to the head guard, and basically before they leave, basically says to him, "Yo, man, I don't approve of your actions, but you do have some points. Like you are kind of right." And the guard says, "Wow, I wasn't expecting that from a Jedi. you're pretty cool. However, they then leave, or they go back to Coruscant, and Mace Windu, it is revealed that Mace Windu is going to be promoted to the Jedi Council in place of Master, where Master Khatri's empty, because Master Khatri's seat is now empty, Mace Windu is going to be promoted to the Jedi Council, and that is that.
In the Sith Lord takes place during the events of The Phantom Menace. We see Dooku, not a Jedi Master anymore, but still allowed access to the Jedi archives, go in under his recently deceased friend, Jedi Master Sifo Dyas's name, and erase the planet of Kamino from the Jedi archives. He steps out and he sees a bunch of whispers happening in the Jedi archives in general. He asks the chief librarian, Joe Costa, knew about it, and she reveals that his former apprentice, Qui-Gon Jinn, claims to have encountered a Sith Lord on the planet of Tatooine. Dooku then confronts Qui-Gon about this revelation in the halls of the temple, along with former Jedi Council member Yaddle. Then we flash forward to after the events of the Battle of Naboo. Qui-Gon Jinn has unfortunately perished in a duel with Darth Maul, who then, of course, was presumed dead afterward as well. Dooku talks to Yaddle for a little bit and then goes to the works, where he's meeting his new master, Darth Sidious. Yaddle senses something is off and follows him. Dooku expresses incredible anger at Sidious for having killed his former apprentice, who he considered as a surrogate son. And Sidious says that great sacrifices have to be made in terms of the for the greater good of the galaxy. And Yaddle hears all of this and is horrified that Dooku has partnered himself with the Sith Lord that has been revealed to be behind everything. She reveals to the audience, and maybe to Dooku, we don't know if Dooku knew this or not, that she herself had stepped down from the council because she didn't agree with their political leanings, like much like Dooku. But Dooku at this point is way too far gone to see the light, and confronts Yaddle and defeats her in a duel, seemingly collapsing the door frame of the building that Sidious and himself are in on her. But then she, with a defiant gesture of the light side, lifts up the door with the force and lets the light into the dark building, but collapses from the pressure afterwards, and Dooku executes her afterwards, revealing his full allegiance to Darth Sidious and his corruption to the Sith, and transformation into Darth Tyrannus has been completed. So let's do this thing. Let's go with Justice first, because this is of course the first one we're looking at. We got quite a short to start with here. So first of all, I would just like to acknowledge and I'm excited to do this because our last episode with Andy from Force Fans was fantastic, and they had a lot of great thoughts, and we had a lot of fun talking about these episodes. But it is very widely acknowledged, and I would agree with these sentiments, that the Dooku shorts, on average, are more widely liked than the Ahsoka shorts. And I would agree with that. If you like the Ahsoka shorts better, then all power to you. But personally, I think that the Dooku shorts, for me, hold up better as a whole, just because Dooku was a character that we didn't know as much about the backstory, so the information didn't feel, it didn't feel supplementary as much as it felt like actual backstory was represented. And I understand why they did the Ahsoka shorts, and I actually really like two out of the three of them. But the Dooku shorts, I feel like as a whole for me, are a lot more they bring a lot more to the table.
I agree. I think we already have, and I quite liked a lot of moments from the Ahsoka shorts, and this is in no way a dig at them. This is in no way a dig at those shorts themselves, but we already have so much Ahsoka. We already have, you know, all of the Clone Wars, you know, her appearance in Rebels, you know, even the Mandalorian, you know, the Book of Boba Fett, and then obviously Ahsoka coming up with Dooku. Like you said, I agree, it feels more integral, kind of what they're filling into his character, whereas it kind of felt in the Ahsoka shorts, it kind of just felt like they were looking for any possible gap in the story where they could have reason to, you know, slide another story in there. But I mean, for the Dooku ones, like, these are big, big moments. All three of these are big, big moments for Dooku, kind of looking at his fall and split from looking at his split with the Jedi, his fall from the dark side. These are all integral moments. There's nothing here, I think, that really feels superfluous or...
I'm not sure if I would go that far. Again, then we'll get to my issues with, because I have virtually nothing bad to say about Justice or the Sith Lord. Wish I could say the same for Choices, but we'll get there. But let's get into Justice, because, you know, enough. Yeah. So we have this pairing, and I love this dynamic duo of Dooku and Qui-Gon. I would get an entire season of television around Dooku and Qui-Gon. I would. They're such an interesting pair. As Jedi, especially, I just want to say, I love, you know, my love for Dooku as a character. I also love that now we're getting to see him as a Jedi, because he spent most of his life, he spent a good 70 years around of his life
as a Jedi.
A Jedi. We saw the last 10 or so as a Sith, and that's cool. And he was a very interesting character as a Sith, but, you know, being a Jedi was what the majority of his life was about. And I'm glad that we got to see Dooku as a Jedi, especially because it makes it that much more tragic. And I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about tragedy in these three shorts, because that's, I feel like, what all three of them lead up to, is this immense tragedy of this guy who really had a lot of good ideas about the Jedi and about the Republic and about their own the galaxy, but took them in the wrong ways with the wrong ideas, took away the wrong things from them, and not only turned against the Jedi and the Republic that he swore, you know, to protect so much, but really had some sincere and honest and noble beliefs poisoned and corrupted into the most vile and cruel of intentions.
Yeah, I really think the only fault with what he did, I think, was the fact that he, I mean, pretty big one, but the fact that he fell to the dark side, and the fact that he, you know, was manipulated, and was his ideas and his issues were kind of co-opted by Sidious, obviously, for his own purposes. But when you really think about what he was thinking and the issues, as we'll get into, the issues that he took with the Jedi, with the Republic, with the way the two are intertwined. Personally, I see nothing wrong with that, you know? I mean, I think he's absolutely right in thinking that the Jedi should not be the Republic's lapdog. They should not just be an implement of the Republic, of the Senate's political agenda. And that is ultimately, obviously, what doomed the Jedi, is that they tied themselves maybe too closely to the Republic.
Yeah, but let's get into this so we can talk about more of the specifics. Yeah. So they touched down, the dynamic duo Dooku Qui-Gon touched down on this planet. And I also want to talk about Qui-Gon very briefly, because Qui-Gon is portrayed in this short by Michael Richardson, who is the son of Liam Neeson, who, of course, we all know and love as Qui-Gon Jinn. And not only is that a nice nod, like thematically wise in a behind the scenes twist, but I also think Richardson does a very good job at young Qui-Gon here. Like, you know, you like, if you told me, like, at a certain point, if you told me if it was a young Liam Neeson at the beginning, I might have believed you. Like, it really does, it, like, of course, you know, genetics and all that kind of stuff, but, like, he really does a convincing job, not just as portraying somebody who would be, like, a young version of his father, but as a young version of the character. Because, you know, there's a difference between, of course, the actor and the character. And I just really like his portrayal of Qui-Gon. And I actually really like, I also really love the depth that this gives Dooku, especially because, no shade to Corey Burton at all, I love Corey Burton's Dooku, but for me, there's a part of Dooku that will always be Christopher Lee. And since Christopher Lee's unfortunate passing all those years ago, I think we're coming up on a decade since Christopher Lee's passing. I believe it was 2015. I thought these three shorts served as a wonderful wow. tribute to not only Dooku, but Christopher Lee's portrayal of Dooku.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I don't know, in terms of, I mean, obviously the Dooku's performance in here was incredible. I think I didn't love young Qui-Gon in this. I think, I mean, it's not so much that there was anything wrong with the way that young Qui-Gon was portrayed or anything like that. I just think that, I mean, granted, it's a short, you know, it's not really about him, but it did feel kind of flat just to have him in there for just a few sentences that he spoke and whatnot. And I felt, despite his role, I was underwhelmed, and I thought Qui-Gon's presence in this short was a little disappointing, and I would have liked, and obviously it's a short, but you know, maybe in another form we can see Qui-Gon and Dooku, you know, and kind of see their relationship as master and apprentice before everything goes south.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I just didn't have the same problems with you, but that's fair. One of my favorite first details in this is when Dooku goes into the bar. When I watched this for the first time, and Dooku goes into the bar and he sits down, I sat up straight, because I don't remember the source of this. And I can't find the source of this. If anybody knows, tweet at me, email us, slvinagalaxy@gmail.com. I want to find the source. And I'll probably end up finding it from one of our friends in the community. I don't know the source, but there was an interview that Dave was doing a long time ago, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, where he was talking about how George Lucas first described the Jedi to him.
Mm.
And he said, you know, and when this is when Dave was just hired for, or maybe he was doing the interview process for what would eventually be the Clone Wars. And he said that George said, you know, a Jedi would approach a situation and he would sit down at a, and they would sit down at a table and they would put their lightsaber down on the table and they'd say, let's talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think George meant that as a more symbolic way of like, oh, this is how a Jedi acts. This is how a Jedi behaves. But then Dave literally puts that right into a short. And I love that. I love that shout out to his mentor and his, you know, the guy who created this whole thing in the first place. And I thought it was just the, like, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, obviously this interview is, you know, it's like hardcore fans will look for it and they will find it. And, you know, obviously I remember it and I'm obviously not the only one, but it's not so, like, it's one of those in references that, if you know, you'll get it and you'll laugh. But if you don't, it seems normal for something a Jedi would do. It's one of those, if you know, you know, you know. And yeah. I really love that little nod, as well as it just being such an interesting way of and the way Dooku says it, allow me to make my intentions clear. And then he puts the lightsaber down on the table. And very much I like that it's about, like, I don't want to use this. I could, but I don't want to.
Yeah, that I kind of I like that. I love the way he's kind of just very no bullshit about the whole thing. It's like, okay, like you can tell he's kind of he doesn't have a lot of patience. You know, it's just I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny. He's like, okay, you know what? Here's the deal: cooperate with me, or I'm gonna go full Jedi. I'm gonna go full Jedi on you.
I really love the literally, you know, placing the lightsaber down the table like Torch told Dave all those years ago. I actually really also love the twist in this episode, because, you know, the Jedi are going into a classic hostage situation. You know, they're disgruntled citizens taking captive of a senator's son to we don't know what reason. But then they cleverly do a very Clone Wars style twist on us and say, but what if they were right?
Yeah.
But what if they had a point? Which I think is one of the best ways they can take this. And in addition, having the son go, yeah, I actually agree with them. It's a great storytelling twist to pull, and I really find it interesting.
Yeah.
How that, and it's great how well they execute it. Again, a lot of the stuff I love about this specific short and other ones too, of course, but is they present these ideas and then they execute them very well. You know, things can sound good on paper, but unless they're executed, if they are not executed well, that's a big step that's missing. I'm not saying that ruins it entirely, but this is just well written, but also well executed ideas.
Yeah, definitely. I thought they got Dooku pretty. I thought they got Dooku pretty spot on in this. And you know, one thing that I thought was interesting, kind of symbolically, even as a Jedi, you notice what Qui-Gon Jinn is wearing. He's wearing the cloak, the Serenos. I assume it's a Sereno style cloak. You know, it's got the stripes on
Dooku
it.
Dooku or Qui-Gon?
I said Dooku, right?
No, you said Qui-Gon.
Dooku. Oh, I apologize. I misspoke. Yeah, Dooku. Yeah. The thing.
Yeah.
Dooku wearing the Sereno style cloak. You know, has a different pattern. It looks totally different. It has the metal fastener on the front, and it's very, very similar to the one that he wears as a Sith Lord, as the leader of the Separatists. And so I wonder, and granted, I haven't read every single, you know, canon book and resource out there on Dooku, so I don't know if there's maybe an explanation. But I wonder, you know, how much was Dooku at this point aware of his noble status, of who he was?
I think he was very aware. I think the idea is that Dooku had this sense of pride and individuality about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that he learned of his heritage. Again, I'm not sure about this, but just to make sense with Dooku's character, he learned about his heritage and he was proud of his heritage. And he wanted to, you know, he obviously was very honored by his status as a Jedi, but I think he also wanted to blend the two worlds.
He did, yeah. I guess ultimately that I don't really stand for. You got to kind of be, at least in
I mean,
that's just the way it is.
There's an interesting blend between the two of them because, as you mentioned, that Dooku is a noble on Sereno. It's not just that he's proud of his Serenian heritage. It's that he's a noble on this planet. And we will talk about this, ironically enough, next episode. Because if you remember, the first two episodes of The Bad Batch Season 2 take place on the planet of Sereno.
I remember.
Which is a fun coincidence that we're talking about it right now. But you know, even though Dooku's seems to be interested for standing up to the common for the common folk in these, at least in these first two episodes, that's not his heritage.
Yeah,
that's not like once he goes away from the Jedi Order, like, you know what his official title would have been when he deletes Kamino from the archives? It wouldn't be Jedi Master Dooku. No, he's left the Order by then. It would be Count Dooku. Like, he's assumed to be up until the Jedi realize that he's Darth Tyrannus. He's Count Dooku. Yeah. He is the ruler of the planet of Sereno. He is, by default, not a commoner.
Yeah.
And
but he I think does have a strong... I don't think that means... I think the point here is just that he is a strong... He has a strong sense of justice, obviously, and...
I think that that at a quite a bit of a point that he had that, absolutely, and I think for a lot of his life he did have that. But let's ask Romar from the second episode of The Bad Batch how much you know, let's ask him about Dooku's effects on Serenian life when he was actually the Count, and I think we'll get some very different opinions. Not to say that this is inconsistent with the character. This is incredibly consistent with the character. I think that Dooku, while he was a Jedi, did have that, was more highly bound to that sense of standing up for the common folk. And I think, yeah, you know, he started to become more and more detached, not only because of Sidious's machinations, I think those were a huge part of it, but also because he was the literal count of a planet.
Yeah, and he went back and he went into the mindset of, you know, the divine right of kings.
He had a literal palace.
Yeah, whatever the equivalent of that would have been for Sereno, which seems very much like him. You know, even as the Jedi, he definitely seems, was justice for justice's sake. I think that he definitely seems a bit more on the, yeah, I know I'm a noble side of things. You know, like he's pretty buttoned up.
It's not just I know I'm a noble, it's I'm proud of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. No, but that's a great point. And of course we get to the philosophical crux of this episode, of this short, which is that exchange for me is that exchange between that short exchange between Dagonet once he arrives with his troops and Dooku, where Dagonet says, "You serve the Senate." And Dooku responds, "No, we serve the people of this republic." Which goes into the major philosophical question of this episode. Who do the Jedi serve? And in situations like this, where the will of the Senate and the will of the people are at odds, which side should the Jedi take? Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, that's exactly it, because at this point, the problem is the Jedi, and I think obviously this is kind of at this moment, or this is one moment where Dooku realizes this. That's why this is what the short is it's Dooku realizing the Jedi are conflating. The Jedi are conflating the needs of the Republic, or being loyal to the people of the Republic, with being loyal to the Senate. And that's when he realizes, oh crap, like to be loyal to the Senate would be to be disloyal to the people.
Yeah. I guess here's my, and this is my, and I, this is my only, the, I have two small gripes with this, with this short. And neither of them are major and they really affect this short much for me. But the first one is, I'm not crazy about the fact that when Dooku asked them why they didn't just elect another senator who would represent them better, they just kind of hand wave it away.
Yeah, well, I was kind of thinking, oh, come on, Dooku, you're not that naive. You know that's not how this works, you know.
But seriously, like, I'm just wondering because I have an explanation for why they didn't, which kind of changes a bit of the context of this short for me. But
what's your explanation? Because I would say it's just politics sometimes, you know, no matter how bad it is for some people, if other people are benefiting and the numbers of voting aren't in your favor, especially if there's, you know, voter suppression, maybe, you know, a lot of money involved, corruption, as there definitely is, I imagine, public, yeah, especially at the stage of the game, especially with the corruption, you know, just being unpopular among some segment of your constituency, even in the majority of your constituency, as we see with leaders like Orne Free Taw, with Ryloth and the Clone Wars, is no guarantee at all. And I think what they're kind of saying is, most of the time or sometimes, this so-called democracy is practically no democracy at all in the Republic. But what's your explanation?
My explanation was a tiny bit different, some of the same themes. But basically, because there's that throwaway line that Dagonite's son says, which is like, Dooku says to him that you didn't know about any of this? It's like, no, I spend most of my time in the city. And my theory was that that Dagonite is wildly popular, or at least popular enough among the people in the city.
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
that's all he needs. That he can effectively ignore the people in the more rural areas. And only work for the people in the city. Which, here's the thing. Because in that scenario, Dagonet would technically be correct in this way, and I'm not defending him. I'm not defending him in this. I'm saying he would technically be correct. He is representing the needs of his citizens, most of them. But then the question turns to, which citizens is he representing? And that gets into a whole other conversation of, and I'm not trying to denigrate this short or anything. I'm just interested in the idea of, you know, because these are constituents of his that are obviously and rightfully feeling unrepresented. Because, you know, obviously these are the only constituents of his or citizens of his that we see on the planet, but they're not the only ones that exist. And I'm not saying that the other ones need to be heard more. They're obviously being heard too much. That's obviously our problem. But I don't know. You see where I'm coming from with this?
Sort of. I don't quite understand what you mean, because I think that from a political standpoint, I believe that no matter who elects you, no matter who elects you, no matter who votes for you, who doesn't, using this example, no matter who you're popular with, no matter who your base is, no matter how you get elected, if you're, as it seems is the case here, if you're knowingly or purposefully leaving people that you represented, leaving them hung out to dry, you've abandoned your job and you're not.
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. I guess my only gripe
was that this was done for some kind of personal wealth, some sort of personal enrichment, maybe. I'm not sure. I could be I'm conflating that with the second episode where it was specifically said the senator was shady business. But in either case, I think, to me, this episode is more about, as the name said, I mean, it's in the name, justice. I feel like it's about what is justice in this case, you know, doing something immoral, or are you doing the right thing, doing the wrong thing, like for a good cause, you know, that kind of question that Dooku has to ask with the son being kidnapped. And I mean, the son makes it a pretty easy question to answer.
Oh, absolutely. And Dooku and Qui-Gon do as well, because as we'll get to, especially with choices, I have a theory that you send, I would say 90% of other Jedi Master Padawan duos of this era to that same situation, and that situation gets resolved very, very differently.
Yeah, I think it all depends on it. It all depends on who you send. I think because Dooku is kind of, I wouldn't necessarily call him a maverick like Qui-Gon. Is that the word people like? That's what people like to use to describe Qui-Gon. But he definitely, just the fact that he is kind of naturally more distrusting. You know what? No, I actually think most Jedi, given the opportunity to see and hear the things that Qui-Gon and Dooku do, I think that they might not have force choked the senator and tried to kill the senator, but I do think that they would have said, hey, the solution can't just be we're going to come in act as a judicial force, return the son, punish the kidnappers as criminals, and then leave, which is ostensibly, for the story to work, ostensibly that's what the Jedi and the Republic wanted Qui-Gon and Dooku to do. But I don't believe that most Jedi would have done that.
All evidence to the contrary in choices. I feel like all evidence to the contrary in choices that look that specifically when Mace Windu tells, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, when Mace Windu tells the Samaj, the head of the security guards, that Master Khatri would have listened to them, the look that the expression on Dooku's face to me says, no, she wouldn't have. However great of a Jedi she was, no, she wouldn't have.
Okay. A couple things there though. I think A, that's Mace Windu, who in this episode, the short is kind of saying to us, Mace Windu is a rule follower to a fault. He's like Echo. You know, he will always do things by the book, you know, by, down to the letter of the law as extensively as is humanly possible. B, I don't even believe that Mace Windu, when confronted with actual real suffering like that, that he is in position to help with, I don't think Mace Windu would have turned his back on those people. That's not the Jedi way. And I don't think Mace Windu would have done
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I don't think if he were confronted with that evidence, I think you're right. I don't think he would. But I don't know if he'd get to that point. Because and this is, I guess, going into choices and I might as well let the cat out of the bag with this one. My problem with choices is that to me it's a bit too similar to Justice. And that everything that it tries to do, for the most part, I feel like Justice just does a bit better for me.
I agree. I feel like they kind of, it's to both these episodes' detriment that the other one is so similar thematically.
And just premise-wise.
Yeah.
Choices for me is just a darker twist on Justice. Where it doesn't end out so okay for the constituencies involved. But you'll see in choices, Mace Windu makes it very clear, our goal is to get the body back, not to investigate into anything. Dooku is the one who pushes constantly into the investigation. It's not that I don't think that Mace Windu would care about the plight of the people of Raxus or this unknown planet. It's that he wouldn't look far enough into it because that's not his mission. And that's not what the Jedi Council tasked him to do. And And my key point, which is that my key point as to that's what most Jedi believes, is that obviously, and I'm saying obviously because, you know, this happens, Mace gets promoted and Dooku doesn't.
Yeah.
At least that's my interpretation of it. Is that most Jedi think like Windu does.
My interpretation of that was not that it was so specific. I guess my interpretation of Mace Windu being promoted was kind of like, oh, we see who Mace Windu is, and we see who Count Dooku is. Count Dooku just kind of questions and butts heads with the council and says, fuck it, I'm going off and doing my own thing. Way too much for the council's liking. Same as Qui-Gon. And the council, you know, it's to their detriment and it's their loss. But that's the reason why they choose him. That's the reason why they choose him over Dooku. To me, it made more sense for that to be the explanation rather than just this one singular mission, rather than their built up body of work What do you think?
Well, here's the thing, because if it was about their previous body of work, then, and I feel like this is what the purpose of that scene at the end of Choices was, and I love how this just got into a discussion of Choices, but whatever. But there's that beat where Dooku goes, did you know before we were going that you were getting that seat? And Mace Windu says, no, I didn't. I was with you when we got the emission assigned. Of course I didn't. So it seems to me that one of the purposes of that investigation, of that retrieval, was a litmus test for who would get that seat. And I think that's what Dooku was realizing, is that because because he erred from the council's chosen path, that, as I think they might have been expecting he would do, that he lost the chance for that council seat because of that.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean about the chronology. I do think that is, to me, that doesn't seem very realistic, or at least that is hardly what I would do if I were in the position of the council to decide.
Oh, no.
But I mean, if that's the explanation that they want to imply, then no problem.
I'm not saying that was a good decision by the council. I don't think it was a good decision by the council, obviously. At least for me, the idea of Justice and Choices and the Sith Lord, honestly, all three of these for me is the council is wrong. Dooku's right that the council is wrong. Dooku's right about why they're wrong. But what Dooku thinks should be done instead is also wrong. Dooku just gets the wrong ideas from his very correct ideas about the issues in the council.
Oh, yeah. No, I see what you mean. Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, that does seem like a very council thing to be like, oh, this should be a test, and we're going to decide off this. This is going to be like a Jedi. Guys, this is such a cool idea. We're so clever. It's so fun.
Because there's never been any circumstance in the past of the Jedi Council retroactively declaring a big fuck up that they've made a test for one of their students before.
Yeah. That does seem very in character for the old Jedi, like super great to try and be like super like grandiose and like just super grand. Yeah. Be super grandiose about everything. Just be like, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is how the council, I feel like this is where the council has devolved to, especially now that we know from context after the era of the High Republic.
Yeah.
After the desolation that the Nile ravaged across the galaxy, they went from, because in the High Republic era, and I've been, you know, we saw a bit of this in Jedi Survivor, we saw a bit of this in Young Jedi Adventures. The Jedi were who they said, who they claimed they were, much more. But we're seeing, as we get closer and closer to the events of the prequels, and this is, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 years before the prequels, and I think we'll see a lot of this in the Acolyte. The Jedi are devolving into the state that we see them in circa the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right. Do you have anything else? Sorry, go ahead.
I also, I put at the, I put in my notes for choices, actually, that I just put a little thing in brackets. I just said, let Jacob rant here, because I knew it was going to happen. I have a few more things about this this episode. First of all, the fact that armed soldiers actively draw their fire on Jedi Knights is hugely significant, because, like, even stuff with the, even barring stuff with the Nile, we think stuff with the Nile will be finished hundreds of years before this. I mean, it will permanently change the galaxy, but it will be resolved hundreds of years before this. So it's a very rare sight for anybody to attack a Jedi in this period of time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that's really interesting to see, like, you know, Dooku and Qui-Gon are in a place where they're not really expecting to draw their lightsabers. They're prepared for it, but they're just not expecting to do it. Although I like Dooku cracking again, like briefly tapping into the dark side against Dagone,
yeah,
I have to admit, my one other fault is, I'm not crazy about the line that Dooku says to Dagone when he force chokes him.
Which is?
Corruption like yours must be eradicated.
Oh, I feel like that's the perfect line for Dooku, where he kind of, that perfectly describes, I feel like that perfectly describes his mindset of kind of use any means necessary, which we see with him, you know, tapping into the dark side a little bit, you know, kind of going down that path in a similar fashion to Anakin, I thought.
Yeah, I just feel like that.
That's what that made me think.
It just stood out to me, because very much I felt like the entire episode was very, like, as much as Star Wars can be grounded, it felt very like, you know, we're dealing with real problems with real people and all that kind of stuff. And very much, like, it felt very cartoonish to me. It felt very, like, it felt very on the nose to me.
Oh,
and
weird. Oh.
Yeah, that's just me.
They're two very different things that.
Yeah. It took me out of the moment a little. It took me out of the moment when I watched it the first time, like, yeah, all those months ago, a little bit. I just remember that. And again, it's a small gripe, and I don't hate it or anything, but, like, it was just, like, okay, corruption like yours must be eradicated. I'm like, way to go from 0 to 100 in, like, you know.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, that's just my small issue with that. But other than that, what was I gonna say? Do you have anything else for this this short, or should we just wrap up this short? Yeah. I really love this. I think that simplicity plays to its strength. I think it gets to what it wants to say very, very quickly and very effectively. And I quite love Justice.
Yeah, I'm all right on this short. I don't love it. I think a lot of the moments felt like they just lacked something for me. Just lacked that special something to really make it, you know, remarkable. But it was solid, I thought. It was quite solid.
Yeah.
All right. The choices.
Choices. We've already gotten into quite a bit of this. So I think this one might be a little shorter, but like, I feel like with Justice and Choices, to discuss one is to discuss the other. Because, again, yeah, two, and I think I might attribute this to Choices a bit more than you do, just because justice comes first, and because justice, I think, has the pairing of main characters that I like a little bit better. I like seeing Dooku with Qui-Gon a bit more than I like seeing Dooku with Mace Windu, but I think that's also because I don't really like Mace Windu, and he proves to me in this short time and time again why he keeps pissing me off. Where he literally says at the end of the episode when they're departing for the funeral that the Jedi Council is defined by neither politics nor ego. And then they promote Mace to the council because he played by their little rules better. I'm like, what are you talking about, my man?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, Dooku's ego is a little hurt by that, clearly.
I mean, yes, but like, you know, I'm not saying that does Dooku have ego? Absolutely. That to me, I feel is the point of all three of these shorts is that Dooku learns all of the wrong lessons from the right acknowledgments of failure.
Yeah.
He gets why they're wrong, right? But he gets his, but his response is also incorrect. That's the problem.
We were just talking about this last week with Andy, so I feel like I have to say, how much of this with the Jedi is really Dooku's fault? Because we see with the way Anakin acts with Ahsoka, you know, we last week, you know, Anakin kind of, the Jedi seem to have a culture at this point. They seem to have a culture of silence and of not really, there's a culture really of not questioning the leadership and of just respecting what the High Council says and respecting the party line, you know, the doctrine, whatever the traditional Jedi way may be, and not really, it seems like it's very frowned upon for anyone to speak up with their own ideas or criticize the ideas or the way that the High Council is running things. So I think in that sense, it does make sense if we look back, connect the dots, how we see Anakin being treated and how we see Anakin reacting in the Clone Wars, as well as how we see Anakin being treated and reacting, of course, in Tales of the Jedi. I think it makes sense why he might want to keep these things to himself. And as you say, he doesn't necessarily learn the lesson that he should, where he doesn't necessarily become more vocal and outspoken. Rather, he kind of turns inward and broods about it, and that leads him down a different path.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, someone being like Dooku being, and you know, I've already kind of said this, but like with Anakin, I think Anakin actually had a lot of the same problems as Dooku. In that I think he recognized that the Jedi were wrong for X, Y, and Z. And I think but I actually think Anakin, unlike Dooku, I think Anakin had, like, I think he, Anakin had incorrect theories about why they were wrong, like bad explanations for why they were wrong. Like he was right about the fact that they were wrong, but he wasn't right about why they were wrong. Whereas Dooku was right about why they were wrong, just didn't know how to respond to that.
Dooku definitely has, in these episodes at least, more developed ideas, as we kind of see with what he says, but also in all these kind of unspoken ways, we kind of see that Dooku definitely has a more developed, nuanced and realistic idea than Anakin, where Anakin is basically like, the Jedi are stupid because we won't do whatever it takes to win. But there's
stuff with like Dooku is very much like a, and this gets twisted by Sidious pretty easily, but Dooku is like, the Jedi should stand up for people, like should protect people who can't protect themselves. They should stand up against corruption. And then we have Anakin, and then we have Anakin. Well, then they should be made to Skywalker. who's, you know, straight up promoting fascist ideas to his senator girlfriend over lunch. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do have a lot in common, and I think there's certainly parallels where both these guys have, they're in a situation where they have a lot of very legitimate grievances, concerns, gripes, misgivings with the Jedi, with the Republic, with the way that the Republic and the Jedi function between one another, but they don't really have anyone they can turn to talk about it. And so Sidious manipulates that and uses to get them to do what he wants and to kind of radicalize them into, you know, being dark side maniacs.
All I'm trying to emphasize with this idea is this. There was this person on Twitter, I forget exactly, this was a while ago, they were saying that they were saying something like, without Mace Windu, Anakin wouldn't have turned to the dark side. Mace Windu is the reason that Anakin turned to the dark side. And
that's just
what? Sorry, say that again.
That's just being a Mace Windu hater. What happens?
And I will completely admit that's complete bullshit. To say that there is one singular reason why Anakin turned to the dark side, one single thing that caused Anakin to the dark side, one single influence, is completely wrong. In my opinion, I think that there were a whole bunch of things that caused Anakin to turn to the dark side. I think some of it was him. I think some of it was Mace Windu. I think some of it was the Jedi as a whole. I think some of it was even Padme's influence. Obviously, quite a bit of it was Palpatine. But to say that one singular thing drove Anakin to the dark side is completely, in my mind, reductive. Same thing with Kylo, honestly. Same thing with quite a few people on the dark side. And I think that it's important that we acknowledge, at least to me, it's important that we acknowledge not only the stuff that was taking place, like, I think that the fact that Anakin chose to go to the dark side is as important as the things around him that made him choose to go to the dark side. And same thing with Dooku.
Yeah.
I think it's complicated. I think this whole thing is complicated. And I think it's not just one thing. It's many different things that caused Anakin to do what he did and Dooku to do what he did. But I think that reducing it down to one misses the impact of all the other ones. That's my thing about that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I agree. I think that would be reductive to say that it's just one thing. I think the similar, it's probably true for Dooku as well. But I mean, yeah, I do love, for what it's worth, you know, these two episodes are very similar in kind of the theme of, like, oh, the Jedi come in and then, you know, Dooku realizes, you know, hey, maybe the Republic, maybe the Jedi, maybe we're not really all that we're cracked up to be. You know, that kind of thing happens. But I will say, I think that I do love the whole Jedi detective shtick is pretty fun. You know, them going around.
Yeah, I really do like the Jedi detective stuff. Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, I would like to see, I don't know, I Star Wars makes me sad sometimes, and Mace Windu is one of them, because I always thought Mace Windu was, like, one of the coolest Jedi growing up, and still do. You know, he's got a purple lightsaber, you know, he's just, I mean, he's played by Samuel Jackson, like, I just think he's one of the coolest Jedi. You know, he has his own form of lightsaber combat that's pretty much just his. Who else is using Vapod, for crying out loud? But they just, every single time, Lucasfilm or whoever, they just take every opportunity to make him as, like, as unlikable as possible. This is a prime example of that. They make it really, really hard to like Mace Windu, and I want to like Mace Windu because I do like Mace Windu.
Yeah,
Just
this short does not do any favors for Mace Windu. I'm going to acknowledge that.
Definitely takes some Windu's point, whatever, you know, like.
Yeah.
Not a good look for Mace.
No, absolutely not. One last thing to mention before we move on to the Sith Lord, here's the behind the scenes. I don't like have this confirmed, but like given the chronological timing of this stuff, it unfortunately makes sense. All respect to Mr. Tom Kane, who had a horrible stroke about a year ago, year or two ago, that disabled him from voice acting any of his iconic roles in Star Wars and otherwise, including in the funeral scene, because there is no reason that the funeral for Matrick Cotri would have been done by Ki-Adi-Mundi and not Yoda. Other than they didn't want to recast Yoda out of respect for Tom, but they wanted to have Yoda there. Yoda does not speak a single line to anyone in Tales of the Jedi. I think this is the only one he's in, Choices. And I'm not saying this to blame anybody, absolutely not. But that makes me extremely sad for Kane, who has given so much to Star Wars, especially in the animated universes. And all respects to the guy and all love to that guy. And
it's just
terrible. Really sad. It's really sad. It's really tragic.
All well prayers, good energy.
Yeah, out. All well wishes to the Kane family, just in general. So there's that. But do you want to get on to the Sith Lord?
I think that this is the meat and potatoes for me, is the Sith Lord.
I'm going to spoil my thoughts on it. The Sith Lord is one of the finest pieces of Star Wars animation I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I loved it. I don't know how to compare it to other things. I don't know.
This is on the level of, I said in my conclusion to my notes, I said this is on the level of Mortis, Twilight, Twin Suns, Siege of Mandalore. Like, this is on that level for me comfortably. This one is just like, what the... I don't know how Dave wrote this. I do not know how Dave wrote this, but it's one of those things where every single beat of this episode makes complete sense to me. Like, yeah, that would happen that way. Yeah, I totally get it. And, oh, but isn't it so cool that he did that way? Let's just launch into it.
Yeah,
Dooku deletes Kamino from the archives.
This was the first
about it. We heard about it.
Did we know that it was Dooku? Because I didn't know that.
I'm not sure if we knew it was Dooku, but like we knew that somebody deleted it from the archives, and it made sense that it would be Dooku.
I mean, I guess it makes sense that Sidious. I guess we need to kind of address if we can. Let's address the big picture chronology. I didn't realize, and I don't know if this is new. Is this new, Eli? I don't know. Again, like, I don't know every canon source. I don't know if there's maybe, you know, besides the Clone Wars and everything, obviously, I don't know if, is there a novel out there, something canon, that tells us more about Dooku? I did not realize that there was a point at which Dooku was still friendly with the Jedi enough, because...
I can enlighten you on this. This is from the Kevin Scott audiobook, audio original, Dooku Jedi Lost. Dooku left the Order about a decade or so before the Phantom Menace. I forget exactly when, but significantly before the Phantom Menace. But it was completely amicable. It was Dooku didn't agree with their political ideas.
I was going to say impression that it was more amicable. Like, I didn't realize
absolutely was. He wanted to go back to being a Count on Sereno. The Jedi were very sad to see him go, but they still regarded him as a friend. He still kept his privileges within the Jedi, or he just wasn't a part of them anymore. He still kept his lightsaber. And then during that time, at some time, we don't know exactly when, but we know it was way before the Phantom Menace, Sidious approached him, as I'm sure, as Senator Palpatine of Naboo, and was like, hey, doesn't the Republic fucking suck? Don't the Jedi fucking suck about the Republic? Don't you hate them? Don't you? And he just kept, I'm sure he just kept poking him about it. Like, don't they suck? They gotta suck, don't they?
Yeah.
They suck. But Dooku was allowed, obviously, back as a friend. As a friend of the Order, even though, you know, he wasn't a part of the Order anymore. They thought that this was just, you know, old Dooku being his eccentric self and having his own differences with the Order. And it was, until it wasn't. At least that's how I understand
it. Yeah, that makes sense. Wait.
Yeah.
Freaking killed Yaddle. What? Like...
Yeah, but anyway, we'll get to that when we get to that. So Dooku erases Kamino from the archives. Man, when I saw that on a screen, it's incredible to witness.
I was like, wait, what? What the hell?
Yeah, it's like, just to hear that voiceover say it out loud, Kamino archive data, like, deleted, is wild. After all of this.
Yeah. The Jedi really need to work on their cybersecurity.
Oh, they really do. That is one thing I'm like, nobody had, like, there wasn't even a record of it being deleted. What the fuck is going on here? These are the fucking Jedi.
But I thought that it was Sifo Dyas who had deleted it. Or is that,
it was actually.
When did they ever say that? My memory is failing me. But
well, your memory must be failing you about this short, because remember, Dooku didn't log in as himself.
Oh, he logged in as, yeah, of course, of course, of course.
He logged in as Sifo Dyas. So technically speaking, Sifo Dyas did delete it from the archives. So there's that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just, I don't, you know, bingo card for me harping on the fall of the Jedi, but I think it does definitely speak to the Jedi's complacency that you just have an ex-Jedi show up after, you know, 10 years, just walk into
the archive. Think he'd been there, like, I think he'd been around there, like, earlier than just that, you know what I mean?
A non-Jedi just straight up walks into the archives, deletes the whole planet, and no one notices, and he just leaves. Like,
oh, absolutely. I think it's very questionable. It's very questionable. But then we flash to the halls of the Jedi, and we get two of the biggest W's that the series manages to pull, in my opinion.
Which are?
Which is Dooku approaches two Jedi, and one of them goes, I have encountered a virgins in the Force. I'm like, holy fuck, that's Liam Neeson. It's Liam Neeson. And then Yaddle starts talking. And it's Bryce Dallas Howard. I mean,
awesome as well.
I love to see two people who have contributed so much to Star Wars through very different means. Obviously, Liam as Qui-Gon in, obviously, Phantom Menace, but also with his cameo appearances in TCW. And and of course in Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now in this, of course. And then Bryce, as her incredible directing work on now four episodes of The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, respectively. You know, I love to see them being able to share that space. It's really cool, and I think Bryce kills it as Yaddle. Here, I think she is a rare combination, in my opinion, of somebody who's great as an actor and great as a director. You know, I've seen her in stuff like I think she kills it as in the Village, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. I think that she's fantastic in that role. I haven't seen the Jurassic World movies. I've heard that they're not great, but I've heard that's a lot more because of the writing and not because of the acting. But But yeah, I think she's great as an actress, and I think she's great as a director. And it's really great to see her as Yael here. And I think she brings such an interesting character to that, the interesting personality to that character, who was a puppet in episode one. That's all she was literally a puppet in episode one. And I don't mean like
Yeah, it's
Yoda
cool to
was a puppet.
see it.
I mean like she literally did nothing. She had no character before this.
Yeah, it is. I think it's great to see Yaddle get some, it'll get some airtime, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
Yeah.
I highly appreciated that.
Yeah.
Obviously, three of, you know, Yoda, Yaddle, where are they from? Never gonna be.
Yeah,
Never,
absolutely. No,
never.
never gonna be answered, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
I also like I the one of the peak tragedies of this short. I should like to meet him someday. You're always singing his praises. 10 years later, it was a great pity our paths have never crossed, Obi-Wan. Qui-Gon always spoke very highly of you. God, a knife to the chest.
Yeah.
Knowing that,
Dramatic.
and I happen to know actually that in there's a part in Padawan, the Kirsten White book, that details Obi-Wan's time as a Padawan. Where Youngling Obi-Wan sees a Jedi across the hall, and he's like, "Oh, wonder who that guy is." And it's Dooku. So they've been in the same room together. They have heard things about each other. They just didn't meet until like they've done everything short of meeting until clones. And it's only once Dooku has completely betrayed everything he stood for that Obi-Wan gets to see a guy who, in Jedi terms, would be his grandfather. Cruel tragedy. Cruel tragedy. Hurts every time.
Yeah, one of those moments. I also thought the music, as far as music goes, this short was pretty incredible. The
The
music,
Kyners killed it. The Kyners killed it as they always do, but especially here they killed it.
yeah, there was,
I love the music in this.
it was so great. It was like, it's, I mean, every episode was amazing, but this one especially, it was like shades of like Revenge of the Sith. There were shades of the
Like,
Bad Batch music, and even like the shattered Order
I was gonna say,
66.
like later Clone Wars season 6, season 7, yeah.
It was incredible. It was really reminiscent of like the music during some of those scenes
Yeah.
in Revenge of the Sith, as with, you know, Anakin, Padme looking out over the Coruscant city skyline as the sun sets, you know, kind of that feeling of impending, inevitable, massive tragedy. This was just
Yeah.
incredible.
Absolutely. Here's another detail that we know of now. This is a minor spoiler for Jedi Survivor. Don't worry, this is not going to, you're not going to know, like, this is not going to really spoil anything. This is just a detail revealed in that game. And if it had been revealed in Fallen Order, it would have made just as much sense. We now know that Jarrow T'Pol, who was Cal Kestis' former master until he unfortunately perished during Order 66, his master was Yaddle.
Oh.
So when Dooku was talking about to Yaddle, they grow up so fast.
Yeah.
Yaddle was probably thinking of Jarrow T'Pol. And Jarrow T'Pol was probably young, running around with a young boy named Cal Kestis, who of course we know from the Jedi franchise, Jedi Fallen Order, Jedi Survivor. And these lines, the Jara DePaul line, the Dooku line, are two of the most influential lines in of Jedi and Star Wars. And I'm really excited. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to keep this intentionally vague, but I think that there is a chance. I hope that the descendants of those lines, like Luke Skywalker, like Ahsoka Tano, do get a chance to meet some of the descendants of the other line, like Cal Kestis, like Kata Akuna. I'm not going to say who that is. Just
yeah.
But I'm really excited to see the future of both those lines. Just got me thinking while I was watching this. Great timing now that we know that detail from Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course we get to the works, which God, I love that. I love the works as a setting.
Yeah.
God, so good.
If shit's going down, it's going down at the works.
That should Oh hell yeah, it is. Oh hell yeah, it is. It's going down at the frickin' works. Love that setting. Love, like, again, it perfectly fits the Sith thematically at the time of, like, operating from the shadows yet in plain sight, within the machinery of everyday life in the Republic. Fantastic. Love that. Again, Ian McDiarmid never fails, never misses. To quote Snoop Dogg in a clip that Jared, the Dark Jedi friend of the show, likes to play.
Like, this motherfucker don't miss.
No, he's fucking good.
That motherfucker don't miss, man.
He's good.
In the heat of battle, he don't miss.
No.
In the heat of controversy, he don't miss.
It was such a, I don't know how to describe, seeing Sidious, this was so, somehow so shocking. I don't know, they did such a good job of that reveal, of putting the viewer in maybe Yaddle, Dooku and Yaddle, and really Yaddle's shoes of, like, you know, everyone's, you're trying to figure out who's the Sith Lord, searching for the Sith Lord, you know, even as a viewer, you know, Sidious is so kind of, there's so much hype around him. Like, actually seeing Sidious on Coruscant kind of feels like a Sasquatch sighting or something, you know? Like, it kind of feels absolutely. Like this just insane presence, you know? You just had this insane presence in this episode, you know, after being the viewer so ensconced in the world of Dooku and the Jedi, and then all of a sudden just this dangerous evil presence. You're like, wow, that, I don't know, something, I don't know what the way that they pulled that off was.
And just generally the short closing on the grimace of Sidious fading into darkness.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
perfect. 100% perfect.
And you could even see it was like younger Palpatine under there, of what little of his face we saw. Like, they really, they had it. They really did a great job with that.
Yeah, God, I love that shit. God, I love the short. It's so great. And like, how many have died because of my actions? Such is the price of freedom. God damn. Like, that's Star Wars to me. That's, you know, it. I always go back to this question: what do you want? What are you willing to do to get it? And you know, this is Dooku constantly compromising, his morals to get what he says he wants.
Oh, the dialogue between Dooku and Sidious was amazing, and the whole, like, at the end of it, I felt bad for Dooku.
He sold his soul to the devil, man. He sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah, he's been completely victimized. Like, yes, it's his own choices, but he's also been completely victimized by Sidious. He's been manipulated by Sidious. I think another thing I just realized that Sidious and Anakin, or sorry, that Dooku and Anakin really have in common. Now, this is Legends now, but in the Legends book, Book of Sith, it's one of my favorite books, that series of guidebooks that includes the Jedi Path, the Bounty Hunter Code, amazing books. I highly, highly recommend them. That book, The Book of Sith, I can, it has a step-by-step guide on how to turn someone to the dark side. And part of that is, like, they have to make the choice. Like, you have to present them with this moment in which, basically the book says, there's a moment in which they will go too far. Your subject, you will force them to use the dark side, to go too far. They'll force them to this point of no return. And then they will be forced to follow the dark side because they will have done something unforgivable. And I think Sidious does that. Sidious does a perfect example of that, both for Anakin, where he puts Anakin in the position where Anakin has to, feels like he has to kill, or Anakin maims and indirectly kills Mace Windu because he thinks it's the only way to save Padme. And then in the same exact manner, you have Sidious taking the situation with Yaddle and using that to his advantage, putting Dooku in a situation where Dooku has to make a choice. And of course, Dooku ends up making the choice that he does. And then, yeah, I mean, clearly Dooku's still pretty conflicted, even though he's been working with Sidious for however many years at this point. He's still really conflicted.
And Yaddle, by the way, credit to her. She gives Dooku so many outs that most Jedi at that time would not give him. And he refuses every single one of them.
Yeah. And I think part of that is the fact that he, like most people who are close to him, he is scared shitless of Sidious. And for good reason. We've seen what Sidious can do. We've seen what he does. Like, he pretty much has Dooku under his thumb. Like, in the Clone Wars, he force chokes him, like, from halfway across the galaxy, it seems. So, you know, he may not have much of a choice. But, again, there's that pattern when you're going to the dark side of, there's that one moment when you go too far, and then you just have to keep going no matter what.
Yeah.
Or the light side is no longer an option. And when once he executes Yaddle, the light side is no longer an option.
Yeah, but again, Yaddle fights for it. I stepped down from my position on the council, which is a revelation that we didn't know until this. And then, of course, maybe my favorite moment in the entire short, probably. Door collapses, Dooku thinks it's done, Sidious goes, "You have done well, my apprentice," you know, classic Sidious stuff. And then the door lifts back up, the light comes in, Sidious looks away like a fucking vampire. Sidious is afraid of the light. You cannot get more literal than that. Yaddle lets the light back in for 1 second, doffers Dooku yet another out. Force theme plays, absolutely deserved in that moment. Lifts up, collapses on, "Let me give you peace, Master Yaddle." Do it, boom. You know, it's that sequence, perfectly Star Wars. Everything about that perfect, like Dave Dunn did the thing.
Also, like, that to me also is like a very, very poignant goodbye for Yaddle, because she could have saved herself potentially. You know, they thought she was dead. She could have sat in there for as long as she needed to, gathered her strength. She could have used her lightsaber to cut through the outer wall, since she's, you know, in between these two sections of the wall or in between two sections of the door that closed around her, is what it looks like to me. But instead of escaping back to her ship, which is right there on the outside, and going back to the council and living to fight another day, she is that dedicated that she is willing to risk her life and almost certain death for just one more opportunity, one last desperate opportunity to try and keep her friend from falling completely to the dark side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's the Jedi way, man. That's the Jedi way.
That was quite a moment.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful moment. God, I love it. 15 minutes. 15 minutes of perfect Star Wars. The one gripe I have, the one gripe I have about this, and this is not a gripe at all. I just wished that somebody had said something about this. Yaddle just disappears and the Jedi just don't think anything of it.
You think they don't? I know there's never any, we never see on screen or we never hear, see, or read about anything, but presumably they conduct some kind of investigation. And
I hope they do. I'd love to see that, honestly.
Find the body or maybe. Yeah. I mean, knowing Sidious, he probably purposefully, he would probably want for the Jedi to find the body and somehow know that Dooku did it, just so that he knows Dooku can't try and go back to the Jedi.
They don't know that Dooku did it. They're not aware that Dooku is a Sith Lord until Attack of the Clones, is my impression.
Oh, okay.
He's a political idealist, not a murderer.
You're right. Yeah. I forgot about that line. Yeah, I know. Okay, well, in that case, then I'm wrong. Yeah. You're right.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But absolutely not, like, totally beyond the pale. Like, doesn't matter. Fucking love this short.
Oh yeah,
beautiful, beautiful piece of animation. Loved it so goddamn much. I will put a little headcanon in this though to you.
All right.
And this is just a bit of a headcanon. Obviously, Sidious has got a rush to be Palpatine, to do Palpatine shit at Qui-Gon's funeral, because this takes place before Qui-Gon's funeral. We know this because Yaddle makes a mention of, oh, are you going? And blah, blah, blah. But I'd like to think that Sidious and Dooku have one more conversation after this. And this blends canon and legends, but fuck it, this game's canon because I said so. In my mind, it's canon. Dooku goes, okay. And Sidious is like, okay, now that we've gotten rid of Yaddle, we have another thing to tie up, you and me. I don't actually think this works, actually. No, wait, it doesn't work, but... Oh, it could work. Maybe. I'm trying to think. It could work. I was thinking after Dooku was like, okay, so you know this? Sidious is like, your old apprentice, we gotta deal with her. And he's like, her? And Sidious is like, yeah, Komari Vosa. She's leading the band of Vora now. We gotta take care of her. We can't have her ruining, which is the prologue of Bounty Hunter. And I like to imagine, because we don't know when it takes place, that the Sith Lord leads right into the beginning of Bounty Hunter. My one conflict with that is that Dooku erases the Kamino from the archives, which, and talks about the clones, but he doesn't mention who the clones is going to be of. So my idea, I guess, would be that he sets up the clone army thing with the Kaminoans, and now, after this, finds the template in the events of Bounty Hunter, and then we splash to Django and Roz with that episode. Remember when we did that episode years and years ago? Fucking love that episode. That's a way of making Bounty Hunter canon.
Yeah, fair.
It isn't. This is just my wild, like, fan theory, but I just love that idea.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
But do you have any other thoughts about this, or should we just...
Nope. My one complaint about this episode is that it kind of just... And I know it's not a comparison. I'm not trying to compare them for no reason, but I mean, this episode just kind of blows all the other ones out of the water. That's my one complaint, is that the other ones just don't look as good as they would, just because this one is so darn amazing and exciting.
I really think that I'll say this. I like one of the other
shorts. Love this episode.
I dislike one of the other shorts. I like another one. And then I love the three others. I think Life and Death, for me, Life and Death, Justice, and Practice Makes Perfect are fantastic. I think Sith Lord blows them all out of the water, but I think those three are fantastic. I think Choices is very good. I think Resolve, for obvious reasons, is kind of shit, unfortunately. But I think really it's five hits and six and five hits and one miss for me. And just because the Sith Lord hits harder than the other four do, at least in my opinion, doesn't mean the other four are invalid. I've had a really great time talking about Tales of the Jedi. I think season 12 and a half has been fun for the two episodes we've done it. But of course, we got to talk about next week. Next week, we finally do it. Episode 103 of In a Galaxy, season 13 of In a Galaxy.
Long have I waited. It feels like it's been forever. We've been stalling.
Special Republic Force Unit, Clone Force 99. They call themselves the Bad Batch. Spoils of War, Ruins of War, and the Solitary Clone. The first three episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 2 are going to be discussed by Jacob and myself tomorrow, next week. We're very excited about that. We're very excited to get into Season 2 of The Bad Batch, which we've talked about now. We discussed this last episode. We've talked about more on other shows than our own show. That's going to change very soon. But I'm so excited to get into this wonderful season of Star Wars television now that we know how it all goes down. What a wonderful season of Star Wars television. I just got to say, what a wonderful season. But in the meantime, you can follow us at In a Galaxy Pod on Twitter, at Star Wars in a Galaxy on Instagram. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. We'll be there. If we're not, email us. It's stillbeinagalaxy at gmail.com. SWNGalaxy@gmail.com. You can follow my personal account on Twitter at OGFan327. You can watch and listen to our spin-off show In a Galaxy Trivia, Epic Confrontations. We're still working on getting our May. It's probably going to be an early June match now. Chris Ryan's versus Jerry, the Canon Junkie. But that's going to happen, as well as our number one contender match, Alden Diaz versus Brandon Amar. We're excited about both of those matches. And I think, if there's nothing else, until the meantime, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Always.